This is a Pledge Drive edition of the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we have with us two of your favorite Week in Review guests. Happy to have with us John Sharpless and Joe Winicky to talk about the top stories in the news this week, including new developments in the race for governor. New poll is out showing that race is still close, but Governor Walker pulling a little bit ahead. The voter ID is back in the news. The ACLU and other groups are asking the U.S. Supreme Court to block voter ID implementation for Wisconsin's November election. And we welcome your comments on these stories. We welcome the issue that you want to talk about at 1-800-642-1234. What happened in the news this week that matters most to you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Joe Winicky, former Wisconsin State Senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning.
And John Sharpless, a history professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Well, Joe, I know that you are headed, after the Week in Review, to the funeral of former Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Neil Shively. He passed away earlier this week of cancer. Neil Shively was a friend of Wisconsin Public Radio. He used to answer phones and volunteer here during pledge drives, of all things. So I knew him as well. He was a state capitol reporter.
A man for all seasons. I think the world of Neil and his family. And it's a sad loss. Neil went fairly quickly. And the tributes that I've read of Neil are all well-deserved. But, you know, now he had a lot of rotator cuff problems, and he had some cancer issues, and now he's got that left-handed swing in heaven nailing golf balls, and I'm sure he's breaking par.
Good, good, good. I'm rest in peace, Neil Shively. He never did finish the book he was writing on former Governor Patrick Lucey.
No, and somebody else will have to finish that, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's, you know, there is another press-related, media-related story in the news this week that I thought that we should talk about. The Society for Professional Journalists in Madison is upset that when Michelle Obama was in town, well, actually in Milwaukee campaigning for Democratic candidate Mary Burke, that that Michelle Obama's people were telling reporters to not ask questions of participants at that rally. The Obama administration is now saying that when Michelle Obama comes back to campaign on Tuesday in Madison for Mary Burke, that no such requests or restrictions will be placed on the press. What's your reaction to that, Joe?
Overzealous staffers who think they're more important than they are.
I agree.
I'm sure Michelle knew nothing about it.
My guess is it's not something that came down from the top. People were protecting her. I also understand that there, when these kind of major figures come to campaign for local candidates, they want it to be about the local candidate and not about public policy in Washington. So I think what they wanted to do was focus on Burke and not focus on Obama.
And, you know, the weird thing is, okay, if you let them answer the questions, these are a bunch of big Mary Burke supporters and Michelle Obama fans. They're going to say nothing but gushy, gooey stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, let them talk.
Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter Chuck Kornbach in Milwaukee was happily interviewing people in the audience and just wasn't caught doing it, so he was not asked to stop.
Oh, it must be that liberal public radio again.
Sneaky reporting.
But in any case, let's talk a little bit about those big names coming to Wisconsin. Not only did Michelle Obama come to campaign for Mary Burke in Milwaukee on Monday, and again, she's announcing that she'll be back in Madison this coming Tuesday, but New Jersey Governor Chris Christie came to Wisconsin to campaign for Governor Walker. John Sharpless, do these big-name people coming to Wisconsin make any difference?
I think they help with fundraising in the party networks. That's really important. And I know that among Democrats, there's a concern about turnout. In the last couple of years, they feel that the reason why they've come up short in Wisconsin politics is a turnout issue. When major figures come in, they're largely speaking to people who've already committed themselves. I suspect it's a rare person who goes, oh, the first lady's in town, I've changed my mind, I'm not going to vote for Walker. That would be a rare person. It's a effort to confirm constituencies, fire them up, and particularly it's helpful for raising money.
Joe?
I basically completely agree. I do think that you will see, and by the way, Chris Christie kind of did a flyover to Minnesota and ended up in Hudson, you know, so it wasn't like he was in a population base. But prediction. In the last 2 weeks of this campaign, you will likely see Bill or Hillary Clinton or both and Barack Obama in the state in major Democratic base areas, Milwaukee, Racine, possibly Beloit, Madison, and it's about turning out the base. One of the problems Democrats have had, perception problem at minimum, but it did happen in 2010, is that the Democratic vote underperformed. And the Republican vote overperformed. And one of the ways you get that base out, which was John was alluding to, is to get the big star power in to get people excited.
See, one of the things, you have to, having been in politics, real politics, not the silly things that happen on campuses, one of the things that people don't understand about politics is that it's base-driven. You have to get your people to show up. Then you've got marginal people who lean Republican and lean Democrat, and then you appeal to them to come out, and then you try to suppress the other side's leaners. It seems kind of mean, but if you've got weak Democrats, Republicans try to make them stay home. If you've got weak Republicans, Democrats try to make them stay home. And that's often particular issues. It might be an issue like abortion or gun control, something like that, that's used to suppress those marginal votes. And then in the middle, of course, they're all vying for that independent voter, who I think is very unreliable. And frankly,
I do too.
I think sometimes parties waste too much money on independents because they don't show, they don't know. And it's that simple. A lot of people are independent because they have no political center. They're not driven by anything. You want to get those leaners, those people who normally lean toward Democrats, to show up. And I think that's what the Obama visit's all about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Well, isn't that going to turn anybody off? We've heard at least speculation that candidates don't want to necessarily campaign with President Obama because his numbers aren't up there.
That's right. If you're in Arkansas and Oklahoma and West Virginia, I would absolutely say that. Barack Obama got 53% and 54% of the vote in Wisconsin and is a popular figure here.
Yeah. So any big names besides Governor Christie going to show up for Governor Walker, do you think, John?
I think the Walker campaign is, they may be wrong. Joe's going to correct me on this. But I think they're very confident here that they're going to have a victory. I think they're looking to a couple of things. The recent polls are showing a slight movement toward Walker. But there's something else going on which tends to support the incumbent. People in doubt in the very last week in close elections tend to go for incumbents. I was tied with Tammy Baldwin the last week, and what happened in the last week is that there was a shift of about 5%.
John, that's because we got a poll that showed you tied with her, and we threw everything but the kitchen sink into that race for her in the last week.
I know there was this ad where I was in black and white, and she was in color, and I hated trees and old folks and children, and she was showing.
But that largely, I remember I got called last week in October. I was up helping Mark Meyer, state senator in La Crosse, and the Al Gore campaign up in the La Crosse area. And I got called to shift as many people from a union I was working for down to Madison to beat you.
But I've got that. I think in the final analysis, if you're up against an incumbent, and they've been reasonably competent and they've got enough positives behind them, people will break for incumbents. They just do. They see that name, and
I'm not sure, John.
Well, that's what the data shows.
Yeah.
That's what the data shows. And I think Burke is fighting that. So she comes in close. the odds are, I'm going to predict, if it's really close that last week, she loses because of that. It's a phenomenon that has nothing to do with partisanship. It has to do with the power of incumbency and name recognition.
I would say that you are right in 85% of the cases, but this state has become so polarized, so partisanized. If I was Scott Walker, I'd be nervous about the fact that I can't get over 47% approval. I just would.
Are you nervous at all, though, Joe, that this neck-and-neck race now with the latest Marquette poll shows the governor with a lead outside of the margin of error?
Yes, and the day before that, a separate poll by Gravis Marketing had Burke ahead by 5 points. And I respect Professor Franklin, and I respect his polling, but I'll tell you, in his last two polls, there are some things that make me wonder. And I'll get into it for a second then. In this last poll, it showed that 94% of identified Democrats support Burke and 95% of identified Republicans support Walker. And that sounds about right. And the percentage numbers in Milwaukee and Madison and outstate sounded about right for where they were breaking. But there was one big change. And in this latest poll and the one before, and unlike the first 24 that Professor Franklin did, for the first time in 26 polls, the last two polls actually had identified more Republicans than Democrats in a state that has never had an identification issue where there's more Republicans than Democrats. Now, that could be a phenomenon of the calls and saying that, and that's what people are just telling them, and he may be correct. But they, in this last poll, 41% of the identified participants were independents.
That is strange.
And only 29% were Democrats? That's odd.
That's odd. That is odd.
Yeah, but so you don't think that...
I'm not saying the poll's right or wrong. Yeah. I'm just saying that everybody has become... And Professor Franklin has done a great job in polling, so it's become... All you ever hear, yeah, the gold standard. Yeah. But a day before, there was another reputable marketing firm that did a poll, and it had Burke up by 5. What I think he got is a very close race.
Joe, I think one of the things, there's been a couple of polls over the fall that have shown that Burke has low name recognition outside of Milwaukee and Madison. And I think that would be troubling for her campaign. At this point, people should know who she is. They may not have an opinion on her, but they should, because we both ran for office. You run ads that just say, I'm me,
right?
You know?
Well, and did you just see it? I mean, Wisconsin just got rated as having the most negative ads of any state in the country.
But they're not
pumping each other up. They're tearing each other down to try and get that swing voter.
She ran simple, positive ads about herself early on. I think those, you start out with ads that simply say, I'm a good person. You stand out in fields. You stand next to kids.
Yeah, neither side has, actually.
She had one. I remember us playing that on the show.
If you've still got mom, you stand next to mom. And if you haven't got a mom, you find a mom.
And if you've got dogs.
If you've got dogs. And so you start out with these ads that just identify yourself with good things that have to do with Wisconsin and get your name out there. And I don't think she ran enough of those. I think that was the summer campaign, and I think that was lost.
There's also 5 weeks to go, and elections are won in October, and it just started. And all I'm saying for anybody who's overly pessimistic or optimistic based on the latest Marquette poll, I think Professor Franklin, if he were on, would say the same thing I am, is don't hold your breath on that, because these things are subject to change.
Yeah, it's going to be close. We are reviewing the news of the week with Joe Winicky and John Sharpless. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, joined by Bill Martins, because this is our fall membership drive. Your support is the foundation of Wisconsin Public Radio's budget. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your go-to place for great programs. So make your pledge now to support a service you value at 888-202-2552 or pledge online at WPR.org.
And we're coming off a great hour. We heard from 62 listeners during our 7 o'clock hour. So great work, everybody. Now let's ride some of that momentum here into the Week in Review. Our goal this hour is 33 pledges.
We can do that because we have already 13 of them. So that
that's
is
a start.
Really,
that's a really
good start. Really good start. 20 more pledges to go, and we will make that goal. Let's have a 3-4. What do you call it when you have all three?
Trifecta.
There
we
that
go.
Works.
That's what we want. We want to make every goal this morning. So far, 2 out of 3, we can do it with your help. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And, you know, your gift of any amount automatically enters you in a drawing for 2 tickets on a WPR trip. So help us meet that goal. You'll get entered in the drawing by making a contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And if you're lucky, you may even travel with Joy on one
of
those trips.
I'm going to Alaska. I was very happy to be asked to host the cruise to Alaska. It's in June of 2015. We'll fly to Seattle and play there for a little while. Then we'll go up, cruise to Alaska. We'll see glaciers and grizzly bears and whatever
usually,
else.
Usually, what, 50s, low 60s, maybe that
I
time
no
of year?
I have no idea, but it's going to be nice.
It's going to be warmer than what we've got today.
But it is going to be it's going to be a lot of fun. That's one of 3 trips you can choose from if you're the lucky winner. From this drawing, you're automatically entered with a pledge of any amount to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And also, you know, if you've ever lost your phone or your keys, you're going to want to ask for the WPR logo secure ID tags. So you put one on your key ring, put the other one on your phone, and then if you ever lose those things, those tags will help you get those things back. So that can be yours with your pledge of just $5 a month or $60 or more. Ask for the ID tags, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
But the most important reason to make your pledge is because you realize Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-supported, and you value hearing timely discussions on important topics. You really enjoy this program, The Week in Review, where you hear two guests from different perspectives talking about the top stories in politics each week. You pledge because you like a place to go to find out about state politics. We have the State Capitol Report mm-hmm. every Monday. So we wouldn't be doing these types of programs if it weren't for you. So do make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And again, we're looking for 33 pledges this hour to reach that goal. We've already have 14, so we're off to a really nice start here. Let's make that goal in these next 35 minutes by making that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks very much, Bill. We'll talk to you later. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Week in Review. We have with us Joe Winicky, former state senator and former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and John Sharpless, history professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, talking with us about the latest developments in state, national, and international news this week. We just talked a little bit about the race for governor, the poll showing that it's still close. So is the race for attorney general. I wanted to have you both just comment a little bit on where you see this particular race going between Jefferson County District Attorney Susan Happ and Waukesha County District Attorney Brian Schimmel. This one, too, very, very close. How do you see this one playing out, Joe Winicky?
I don't have a clue.
No?
Well, I mean, it's 75% of the people still don't know who these candidates are.
Absolutely.
I am one who I feel very strongly. I don't know Brad Schimmel. I just don't know him. Other than I know he's a prosecutor from Waukesha, and I also know that he let Scott Jensen off the hook, which is a negative for me. I know Susan Happ. I'm very impressed by her, but you're asking me how the race is going. I just can't tell you. What I can tell you is it's very close, and it could swing either way by a large margin with that kind of lack of name ID.
Your handicap of this one, John?
I'm with Joe on this thing. I can't. I don't have any sense. This race has been so overshadowed the Walker Burke race. Nobody really knows a lot about these candidates. So I think it's really hard at this point to make a judgment. I don't think the numbers that are being generated mean anything in an environment of such low name ID on these people. Happ had this one little moment of apparent scandal where she had a conflict of interest with somebody who had purchased her house. And
she recused herself, supposed to. But it's something you can use in a campaign.
And it was a long time. But that for her, unfortunately, the only time her name came up was an attempt on the part of her opponent to make it a scandal.
Yeah.
I don't know any. I'll tend on these kind of things. I'm driven by one issue.
What is it?
Guns.
I figured. It's one area John and I don't agree on at all. But one thing, and I think you would agree with this, this is the type of race that, and either side with these crazy, after Citizens United and, where money talks, this is the type of race where outside groups, if they wanted to come in and drop a million or two, which is nothing to some of these big groups,
yeah,
could really swing an election either way.
I've already got my NRA card on this one.
Well, it's funny.
I know your NRA card, yeah. But I'm talking
the postcard that comes in the mail from the NRA that tells you, mindlessly.
Would have won an election if we based those, because I never got their endorsement.
Susan Happ, I think, is pro-gun, but in terms of commercials, right?
And pro-Harley.
Yeah, and pro-Harley, too. Mm-hmm. And even though it's been going on for a while, John Sharpless, it just reminded me that the NRA is running ads outside of the Madison and Milwaukee markets, but in northern Wisconsin, they're pro-Governor Walker, saying he defended our right to self-defense, and that if we want to be safe, we should reelect Scott Walker.
That's pretty standard stuff. I don't object to that. That's why I send them money.
Yeah. By the way, I don't object to their right to do that either. I don't.
It's interesting. Down here, that would be a negative.
That's why they're not running here.
The criticism I've heard is that the ad is showing a mean, dangerous man breaking into a house with a woman putting her baby down to bed and scaring people.
Oh, Willie Horton again.
there we go. They're terrifying us. One more.
By the way, when is the last time you ever saw the NRA support a Democrat?
Oh, they do down south.
They've got one or two Bubba Democrats left down there?
They've got these, they got Bubba Democrats.
A couple left. They've taken most of them out. I guess my point is the NRA has become a subsidiary of the Republican Party, but they have a right to advertise in the state if they want. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Nate in Milwaukee, who has an issue that he'd like to bring up. Hello, Nate.
Hi. I thought there's a number of interesting things that connect to the sort of to the O'Keefe person who is currently under investigation under the John Doe. I think he was one more interesting employee of Walker's. And the history with Walker is interesting because before he became county executive, he promised to eliminate cronyism and bring a new code of ethics. Instead, you had people who were actually committing crimes to better serve his campaign. Now, that was something that the Milwaukee DA investigated before John Doe, too, but he was already getting criticized then. Now, a new criticism got leveled against him by someone who claimed to be a longtime employee of his and turns out to have worked for him less for a year. But that's being used by O'Keefe, who is being a connection between Walker and many in sources of money.
Well, what would you like, Nate? What is it that you'd like our guest to talk about?
Oh, I think that this is an example of the way you've got an interesting history combined with large amounts of money and what looks to be an attempt to use many different legal tactics to avoid getting the details of what he was doing either looked at or discussed in the open, yet he wants the DA investigated.
Yeah, so Eric O'Keefe is the director of the Wisconsin Club for Growth, one of the conservative group that's also being investigated in the John Doe. He is demanding that John Doe prosecutor John Chisholm appoint a special prosecutor to investigate his own office. So, John Sharpless, so your take on this.
I've said it before on the show, this whole campaign finance squabble is, frankly, and first of all, a lot of people don't realize it's largely within the Republican Party. The person who will remain nameless, who actually revealed to the prosecutor that there may have been collusion, was a Republican who didn't get funded. So, but Joe and I generally agree on this. For the larger public, this kind of stuff, while just doesn't go anywhere in elections. It's just too arcane. And if it was going to hurt Walker, it would have hurt him by now. I can see Nate's very troubled by it, but I suspect the vast majority of people in this state, even a lot of Democrats, just roll their eyes on issues like this.
Yay and nay. I think what O'Keefe is doing is launching a preemptive strike for fear that more John Doe information is going to come out before the election. And I'll tell you, I agree to a point on what John's saying, but I'll tell you, some of this stuff is just smelly. This stuff that came out recently, that Geobic Taconite gave $700,000 to one of these groups to reelect the governor in the recall. And then right after that, it was Geobic Taconite and WMC that did the drafting instructions for the bill. By the way, you know, they're trying to pick on Mary Burke for supposed plagiarism, which is an unbelievably ridiculous charge. How about, I mean, isn't it plagiarism? I mean, they didn't author the bill. Their name wasn't even on it. We didn't even know they did it except for a mistaken release by a prosecutor's office. And then we find out, my God, we now are having the companies write the law, fund the campaign, and this is our democracy?
You'd think that has legs.
I don't know if it has legs or not. I just think it smells.
Okay.
I just got that off my chest. It felt great.
Let me say, it troubles me, too. When I saw that story, I was really troubled by it. Unlike a lot of people in the Republican Party, I'm absolutely opposed to the mine. They're going to rip a large, ugly hole into the earth of Wisconsin, and there's going to be pollution, and the numbers of jobs are going to be trivial, just trivial.
Yes. Temporary.
I'm absolutely opposed to this project, and I can't believe there aren't more Republicans of courage that don't expose this. If this mine had gone into Waukesha,
it would not happen in Waukesha. He is so right.
So the reason that they're perfectly willing to make a mess out of northern Wisconsin.
And to touch to further clarify my point, the people that are going to extract the iron ore are writing the rules. The watchdog?
Who knows more about it than them?
They know how to evade the rules.
You know, so you're likening that to the plagiarism charges, which you called ridiculous. Why do you say that's ridiculous?
Well, I mean, Thomas Jefferson would have to be accused of plagiarism on the Declaration of Independence then, because most of the ideas from that came from the Enlightenment, from Rousseau and Locke and others. And almost everything... there hasn't been a new idea in politics, John, in 100 years.
time out here, Joe. I'm willing to acknowledge that there's only so many ideas on each side that get repeated. One would hardly say that Walker's plan for state development that he's so proud of is intrinsically his. It sounds a lot like what other Republicans across the country. I think what was a bit shocking was that the actual words came off of other Democratic political websites. And the reason they did
The
consultant had made those websites as well. So he was plagiarizing himself.
How do you do that?
Well,
it's kind of hard to
plagiarize.
You're
maybe being lazy and just...
I know, but how do you plagiarize yourself?
The campaign is being... This is a sign of a lazy campaign. It takes 2 hours to redraft that into new words that are intrinsic to this campaign. Yep. That's... Just because the consultant handed it to the... You've been on campaigns. Yep. That's just a lazy campaign. I'm not saying Burke had to go over the final copy, but people right below her should be aware of what's going on their website. And if it looks canned...
I know, but it's still best practices to me. You take the best ideas from other...
We're not talking about the ideas. We're talking about the actual words were lifted from other websites.
Oh, I mean, I don't have to just view this as so minor. By the way, one of my favorites on this is Scott Walker. You know, remember in the 2010 campaign, his brown bag lunch?
Yeah.
That came directly from George Voinovich from Ohio.
It did.
He stole the idea. He never said he got it from George Voinovich. Mm-hmm. Every politician I have ever known is guilty of taking ideas from others.
I didn't. All my ideas were completely original. Everything came out of my little pea brain.
Okay, I'm with John on that.
You're not going to disagree with that. Here's a big story this week. The ACLU is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to block the voter ID law in Wisconsin after a federal appeals court this week declined to revisit the decision before the election. So, should the U.S. Supreme Court overturn or at least block the implementation of voter ID before the November election, Joe?
Yes, but they won't.
Why do you say yes?
Because we have already sent out thousands and thousands of absentee ballots where we didn't put in the instructions for the voter ID. It's going to cause chaos. What I wish they would do, even if you have to keep voter ID, which I don't like the idea, but if you had to keep it, stay it for this election and put it in place in the future so that we don't have this proverbial chaos. And what I also predict are incredible long lines at the polls this year because of people who have screwed up this stuff and are going to complain and protest about it. But, you know, it ties into the whole thing. My concern in politics these days, the influence of money is huge about my concerns, but it's become the partisanship of the court. And that court can go both ways. It can become a liberal court or a conservative court. But it appears that decisions are not made based on what's, you know, proper precedent or policy. It's based on who appointed you.
John? Voter ID first.
I'm with Joe. I don't think the Supreme Court will take this case. And I'm with Joe. I really think this should, if there was some way to do it, we could postpone the implementation of this law until after this election because it's coming up pretty fast and there's a lot of confusion. And it would have been nice if we had a series of local elections where people would learn how to vote again.
Well, you could start in February and April.
I've said this before on the show. I'm going to irritate both sides on this. I just can't get vexed about this issue. I just really think both sides exaggerate. On the Republican side, there is this notion that the Democrats have raised the dead and they show up in thousands at the polls. You know, after I lost my election, a little old lady called me up and said, "The reason you lost to Tammy Baldwin is a Canadian snuck across the border and voted for her." And I couldn't quite figure out. And I said, "Why?" And she says, "They want to make us have national health." Okay. If you actually look, there are incredibly few, just really rare instances of the wrong people voting. That's the Republican complaint is exaggerated. Let me turn to the Democrats. The notion that if you had for a series of elections the requirement that there be an ID, I think in no time at all everybody would have an ID when they showed up. And the idea that the little old lady who has voted regularly since Reconstruction will never vote again is largely fiction. Both sides exaggerate this thing. And I don't care.
That little old lady is now 160.
I know this is going to really anger people on both sides. This issue just doesn't burn my butt.
David, I'm going to shock John. I agree with him.
Now, David in Wisconsin Rapids, I think it might burn his butt. We'll see. David? David, are you there?
Thanks for taking my call. My comment's kind of right along the lines of the last few things that have been said. You know, I wonder why we don't have a logical progression towards the total implementation of voter ID. Like the little 90-year-old lady, why don't we accept anybody that's 90 years old? And why don't we find out who has a problem, you know, getting to the Department of Motor Vehicles if they have a handicapped or whatever? Why don't we just have a list of things that may be obstacles to getting the ID and just progressively address those so everybody gets one? And then I think, you know, the arguments are gone, right?
I agree. David, you're right on. I think this is much more heated than it has to be.
Yes.
I do not object to asking for ID at the polls. When I get challenged on that, I say to somebody like Joe, I go, "How would you like to show up and somebody's already voted for you?"
Yes.
I mean, you would like to have the person who claims to be the person. On the other hand, once you decide that, you need a period of time to implement that new requirement, and we haven't done that.
I think a simple way would be very close to what both the caller and you said, is you could have even somebody who vouches for your conduct. I mean, the little old lady, the person who knows her, know she lives on that street, know she's eligible. You vouch for that person, and then you make that a provisional ballot, and it's good unless somebody challenges it and can verify they actually don't live there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's fixed.
And then you say, little old lady,
go get an ID.
Go get an ID.
Yep. I could live with that.
Well, we are reviewing the news of the week with Joe Winicky, former Wisconsin State Senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and John Sharpless, history professor at UW-Madison, ran as a Republican for Congress. And we welcome your thoughts, questions, the issues in the news this week that you want to talk about at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You know, we're going to talk a couple of international and national things when we come back. We wanted to talk about the protests in Hong Kong, wanted to talk about the first U.S. case of Ebola confirmed in Dallas. And what else do you want to talk about? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Joe Winicky and John Sharpless during this Pledge Drive edition of the Week in Review. A reminder, we have three pledges to go to make our goal. So that's why you haven't been hearing me bother you too much during this hour. We are almost at our goal. Three more calls. Help us out. Make a pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. So time to talk about, so are you concerned how the CDC, how the administration is handling the Ebola outbreak? We have the first confirmed case in the United States, and some people are really upset. Some people are saying, take it easy. What are you saying, John Sharpless?
I'd like to quote Aaron Rodgers, relax, chill. I think there simply was going to be a number of cases, there may be more, of people who travel from Africa to the United States. To quarantine Africa and not allow any traffic with Africa is preposterous. And let's remember, if an American citizen wants to return home, they're entitled to return home. That's just one of our rules. I really think one of the things that's, to the extent that I understand this disease, one of the things we have going for it is it's not airborne. It does require direct contact with people. We can control it once we've identified it. They seem to be developing ways of dealing with it once people have it. If you can get them to proper hospitals, the tragedy is in Africa, their health care system is so poor. I just think people have to relax. I know the idea. We see movies about plagues entirely wiping out the world. This is not one.
Joe?
Yeah. I mean, if there's a mistake, it was probably made by an overtaxed emergency room at Texas Presbyterian Hospital. It certainly wasn't the CDC, and nobody can blame the Obama, although they blame for everything else. But the good news that could come out of any sort of bad news on this is because people will start fearing it's in the homeland now, that it will raise awareness of the disease. It will probably raise the ability for an international effort to help the Africans in this, because there's such a woeful shortage. In one of those countries, I think it's Liberia or one of them, they have 41 doctors. I mean, it's they just can't handle this rush. So if it scares people into saying, we got to do something, because now for the first time, I'm afraid, that might be what it takes to help cure this outbreak.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about Julia Pearson, the director of the Secret Service, resigned this week after a series of breaches of White House security came to light in recent weeks, including the case of the guy armed with a knife who made it over the fence and into the White House, into the East Room on September 19th. Reaction, Joe Winicky, to that?
That part's just another crazy. The part that got her fired was it was the oops moment where she forgot to tell the president about the guy who had assault charges and stuff that was in an elevator with him, and they forgot to just tell him. And you know, and a couple years before, they found bullets in the White House, and the first family was never notified. Well, somebody's got to fall on the sword for this, and it should have been her.
Here's the problem with the ritual of resignation. All right, she should have resigned. She was the top person in the agency, and the agency failed. But that doesn't solve the problem. You know, getting her out of there.
She wasn't on the elevator. you know, she wasn't there.
Here's a bit of speculation on this. I think the agency's filled with many good men and women. They try to hire really bright, dedicated law enforcement people. And overall, the problem is that it's boring.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, you're looking after the president's dog. You're taking him on vacations. You're looking after presidential candidates. Most of what they do is incredibly time-consuming and boring. And you have to always be prepared for this one horrible moment in which you sacrifice yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That leads, I think, no matter how good you are, it leads to complacency.
Especially when the first family's not in the White House,
And they were not. So I think, I'm not trying to excuse what's gone on. There's been a series of incidents, the drinking issue in Europe, the hookers in Venezuela, these breaches of security around the White House. They're all problematic. But the truth is, there are good people there. It really needs to be remotivated. Perhaps it's so hard to be ever ready all the time. All the time you have to be ever ready.
I want to get you both briefly to comment on what's going on in Hong Kong. As when we first started the hour, you both mentioned that was a story that you were watching and wondering about. What are these umbrella protests in Hong Kong all about, and what's going on there, John?
Well, I've been talking to Professor Dennis in my department about this for about a month. He's our expert on China. One of the fascinating things about the Hong Kong story is that its economic power
mm-hmm.
has actually declined relative to other major Chinese cities. And so its economic leverage is less than it used to be, which actually hurts its political leverage. There was a day when the leadership in China had to be terribly careful about what they did to Hong Kong because it was their major outlet to the world. That's no longer true. Shanghai, Beijing are now major centers for trade and mm-hmm. commerce. The necessity of treating Hong Kong as a special child has declined.
It has, although it's still very strong in one area. I mean, it's there with New York and London as a financial capital.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it fascinating because when have you ever seen the democracy movement, if it will, spread out so wildly in a wealthy country? I mean, it's never – or a wealthy – whatever we call Hong Kong now, but province or whatever it is. And I will make a prediction – there will be a compromise, and this will not end as a Tiananmen.
Good. Well, we're going to leave it there. Thank you both very much for being here.
Thank you.
John Sharpless, history professor at UW-Madison. Joe Winicky, a former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Love it when they join us for the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Joining me now is Bill Martins because, Bill, we have 6 minutes here to ask for support of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, even though we've got some time left, we've already reached the goal this hour. So that's some great news there.
Then why am I talking to you?
I don't know, because I got to do something this hour. But anyway, just because we've met the goal, you know, it's a long pledge drive, and you know we have a few minutes left, so let's make some more pledges and help support the programs that you depend on here, like the Week in Review, and you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have lots of reasons for you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. First and foremost, you're the most important part of our budget, and we depend on listener support to bring you the programs that you value. But this drive, we have a little special something going on. It's a drawing. Anybody who pledges any amount is tossed into this drawing, and, or I should say, a piece of paper with their name on it.
Yes.
Is tossed into this drawing. And then you, if you're the winner, you can choose from three really wonderful trips. There's a trip down the Rhine River.
Mm-hmm.
There's a trip to France, and there's a trip to Alaska. And
yeah.
I'm hosting the trip to Alaska. I wouldn't be hurt if you don't pick Alaska, but you can pick Alaska. And that would be one of the reasons why you want to pledge any amount to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, we hope you've really been enjoying this edition of The Week in Review. I know I have back at my desk while this is going on. And John Sharpless and Joe Winicky, these guys are a couple of beauties. I mean, even though they're they're going to beat me up after now that I called them that. I mean it in a cool way, guys. It's cool. But even though they're on different sides of the aisle, they're able to discuss these things in a way that's fun, and they're funny, and it's engaging and thought-provoking, and they don't get nasty with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We could do that.
Next time. We'll throw down. But if that's the kind of conversation that you really appreciate here on Wisconsin Public Radio, then go ahead and make a pledge of support, because we'd love to keep offering that for you. And you can make that pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And that's why I'm sure we have already made the goal for this mm-hmm. hour in this pledge drive. The Week in Review is a program that you tell us you enjoy very much, because you like talking about the top stories of the week. You like it when we bring guests from different perspectives on to do that. And you especially like John Sharpless and Joe Winicky, you tell us time and time again. So we always make them come on and talk during the pledge drive because of that. But we will have them come on during a non-pledge drive too sometime. But do show your appreciation for in-depth discussion of the issues that matter to you by making a pledge of any amount to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So you give to WPR most importantly because you support the programs, of course. And we mentioned the trips a little while ago, but I want to mention this little incentive we have as well. If you donate $5 a month or $60 for the year, ask for the WPR logo secure ID tags. Okay, so you put one on your key ring, put the other one on your phone, and if you ever lose one of those things, those tags will help. Will help those things be returned to you.
You didn't know you want it, but you want it.
Exactly. When you lose your phone, you'll be glad you have that. So go ahead and make that pledge of $5 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Robin from Chippewa Falls made a pledge. Thank you, Robin. She says, I am commuting again. I love to gain knowledge while I am driving. Well, that is so nice. I'm glad that we can keep you company and you can learn something from our guests while you're driving. Thank you, Robin, for your pledge. So let's try to get at least, what do you say, five more pledges.
Okay.
Five more pledges before the end of the hour.
We can do that.
I hope. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've got a couple of minutes left. We've heard from 42 of you. I just saw it tick from 41 to 42. So we're looking for four more before we're off the air here. And it all starts with you just going online, WPR.org, or picking up that phone, 888-202-2552. It's very simple. You just call up or you go online, give them your name, your contact info, and how much you'd like to pay and how you'd like to pay it. Boom, you're done. Go about your Friday. Have a nice weekend. So again, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars. We do get funding from the federal government and from the state, but listener contributions are the single largest source of our income. Your support is vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know how important listener support is to Wisconsin Public Radio, do make a pledge. You decide how much to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe it's $5 a month. That would be great. At WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Two more pledges to reach that goal that we just said a little bit ago. We can do it, but you got to act now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We will let you also make that pledge as the news is on. News is coming up next. Thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.